Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready for more propaganda? Well, you're in the wrong place at the right time. Columbo Chronicles is for critical thinkers. Let's welcome the consumer advocate for justice. Here's the Rose, Rose Columbo.
Hi, everyone. It's the Rose, Rose Columbo, right here for you on Columbo Chronicles. And today we're entering into the Justice Club. Next week, we'll have another special guest, but this week, I decided to enter into the Justice Club and read important information that was written into a collector's book called Fight Back Legal Abuse, How to Protect Yourself from Your Own Attorney by Rose M. Columbo. That went global, and it is also an international award-winning book, and it is 5-star reviews, and it is still selling out of print, version 2, Fight Back Legal Abuse 2, will be coming out in 2024. So I wanted to give you an example of what was said in Fight Back Legal Abuse 1 that went viral. And it's important for us to know more about the legal system as more and more people are being arrested based on accusation and allegations and circumstantial evidence, more so today than before in history, as well as billionaires donating to the Department of Justice, prosecutors and AGs and so forth, huge amounts of money. So I think it's important for us to try to fight back against that happening in the future. I think Americans need to get involved. And I think that we need to let our legislators know that there needs to be a cap on how much money can be donated to anyone running for office in any position, but in particularly for justices, judges, and for prosecutors, attorney generals, U.S. AGs, or anyone else who is in law enforcement, so we can keep our law enforcers objective and fair and balanced and making decisions based on constitutional federal and state laws, not on personal, political, or financial gain and becoming puppets of billionaires so for their political, personal, and financial gain as well. So on that note, let's get into some information here that I think will be of interest to you. Let's go to, let's see, 49. Let's go to page 49, and I will enlighten you, empower you on what Fight Back Legal Abuse is about. It is chapter 3 in this 2010 publication, and it is called A Heavy Badge, A Gavel, and Briefcase. Police officers follow the law. They protect the citizens from harm, and the American people are more than grateful for their services until most recently, when many on the left decided, including the squad in Congress, to lead a chant of defunding the police. That is totally ridiculous. It makes no sense. It's actually insane to think that we should defund the police, ICE, Border Patrol, or sheriffs based on whatever their political agendas are, to migrate millions and millions of third world foreigners into our nation and scatter them about without upholding detain and deport, vetting, background checks, healthcare checks, and quotas because we don't know who these people are. We don't know what their intent is. We don't know what their political affiliation is with foreign nations. We don't know if they're spies. We don't know anything about them because it's under the 2009 regime who changed it from detain and deport and vet and background checks and health care checks to detain and release. Now, if we walk into their countries illegally, which you can't do because their laws are so strict, you can't get across your borders in most of these countries without going through very strict regulations and identification. But yet, they're demanding they be allowed to come into our country and trespass and violate our laws and disrespect our laws and disrespect the American people and the property of our homeland and our sovereignty and our laws on immigration, which require vetting, background checks, identification, and assimilation. And yet, somehow, they're even in public office. So the natural-born Americans have come last since 2009, and the third-world unidentified foreigners who are ridden with gangs, terrorists, jihadists, cartels, traffickers, are coming first, and we are ordered to pay taxes, increase taxes to support them on scams for food, housing, building apartments for them, educating them and their kids, paying for their births and their abortions, and on and on and on, where our taxes have doubled and tripled for our cost of living, who are the natural-born Americans who are losing their homeland because of the past and targeting Americans on the right who don't agree with violating constitutional laws, state or federal laws on immigration and so forth. So, this wasn't happening in up through 2000s. This was not even considered to be allowed to happen. But in 1993, 94, when President Clinton opened the floodgates to communist China, that was the beginning of the third world countries accessing international waters and importing and exporting to the Long Beach Naval Base and the Long Beach Port to gain access to our intellectual property, to our homeland, to our retail stores, to our inventions, to our jobs and our manufacturing companies. And with the CEOs on Wall Street who seek to use slave labor to become wealthy, promoting this agenda along with President Clinton and the left. That hurt America, not helped America, but helped the wealthy, not the American middle class, who is now being destroyed by collectivism. We are now a land of a non-sovereign nation with no borders. We are a borderless nation, and we have no quotas. So if millions come from, let's say, Africa, or millions come from India, or millions come from China, or millions come from any other third world nation, the Middle East, they will dominate our homeland as illegals or nationals who will overpopulate and conquer our homeland. So perhaps that's the goal. So, but back in 2010, when Fight Back Legal Abuse was published by my, written by myself, this book went viral and actually became a collector's item. And three says, a heavy badge, gavel, and briefcase. So just to give you an idea of what I write about as an advocate for justice, the legendary advocate for justice who began the grassroots movement back in 1989, helping victims of legal abuse become survivors based on firsthand experience, research, and fighting back, and blowing the whistle on certain things. This is the first book that I actually wrote and stunned the nation. Chapter 3, A Heavy Badge, Gavel, and Briefcase reads as follows. Most police officers follow the law and protect citizens from harm, and the American people are more than grateful for their services. The judicial system can't exist without law enforcement agencies, because all agencies are part of the judicial tree whose branches extend across America and are present in our lives. But in order for a strong tree to survive, it must bear good fruit. And when the bad fruit infects the rest of the fruit on the tree, it's time to cut off the branches so the whole tree doesn't rot. In time, the tree will yield new fruit. Remember, without justice for all people, we have nothing but corruption, tyranny, injustices, chaos, and victims of legal abuse. In the Bible, Proverbs 11:30 says, the fruit of the righteous is a tree of life, but lawlessness takes away lives. We are now a lawless nation. The criminals are set free from prisons and Gitmo since 2009, and the targets are the natural-born Americans and loyal, legal, naturalized Americans who attend a rally at the Capitol and were actually marching peacefully except for a group of people. In November 2007, another public servant made the news, which creates more doubt in the minds of our citizens about the legal system. The news reported that Orange County, California Sheriff Mike Corona, a public figure, was allegedly indicted on federal corruption charges, and he pled not guilty. This is the fifth largest sheriff's department in the nation. Orange County is also known as the Orange Curtain. Its primarily white, Republican, wealthy, and conservative. In fact, it's one of the top 10 wealthiest counties in the nation. High-profile politicians visit Orange County's politically wealthy donors. For example, Orange County victims whose homes were devastated by the wildfires in 2007 were fortunate that they were immediately rescued from disaster by the government and insurance companies, unlike the poor who were devastated by Hurricane Katrina that flooded New Orleans. There's a difference in the way people recover from disasters, which are dependent upon government decisions, economics, preparedness, insurance policies, and community assistance. Sadly, there are criminals on the streets but there's a percentage of public servants who cross over the line of crime, and they carry a badge, a briefcase, or a gavel. Some unethical officials arrest and punish innocent people for many reasons. Some unethical public servants send innocent people to jail on trumped-up charges. Unjustly, more than 200 people who were incarcerated for crimes, which they did not commit, were recently released because the DNA evidence was still intact and proved their innocence. At least two prisoners who were found innocent died prior to the discovery based on new evidence. Not everyone has DNA evidence, and not everyone gets a new chance to have their case heard based on new evidence. 20 to 25% of all people imprisoned are innocent, charged based on allegations, accusations, circumstantial evidence, or falsely identified. Recently, I heard on the news that a judge was presiding over an obscenity case and that a lawyer blew the whistle about the judge's website that allegedly depicted a woman painted as a cow and standing on all fours. One must wonder if the women who appear before some judges are the victims of gender bias judges who disrespect women in private and render gender bias decisions in courtrooms. So when people target Donald J. Trump, when he ran for office in 2015 for call it gender bias words that were leaked, and or other males who do that in the locker rooms or wherever else they're at, in a bar, a club, whatever, are they any different than a judge who makes gender bias comments about women or draws cartoons or whatever that are gender biased against females, or make comments in the courtrooms that are gender biased? Are they any better than those who are scorned in the news? How many males are innocent who never ever made a comment, a gender bias or sexual explicit comment about females? The Bible says even thinking it is no different than the act. I remember when the news reported that a judge involved in my own divorce called a female litigant who was in his courtroom standing before him a Jewish princess. This same judge heard a child support arrearage case filed by a single mom who never married the father. And in a filled courtroom, this gender-biased judge asked, why should he buy the cow when he can get the milk for free? Do you really think that those male judges respect women? It's important for judges to attend sensitivity training every year. So, there are many unknown incidents involving law enforcement that most people don't pay much attention to because it doesn't affect them at that time. For example, George P. Wright, author, stated in his book that he filed a lawsuit against former Orange County Sheriff Brad Gates and settled for a substantial sum of Orange County taxpayer dollars offered by Gates' attorney. He states that the settlement offer was approved by the Orange County supervisors after Mr. Wright's attorney filed a lawsuit against the former Sheriff Gates for violating Mr. Wright's civil rights and persons named in the lawsuit filed with the court. So the point is that many citizens have little concern about the behaviors of public servants at taxpayers' expense. Also, Mr. Wright wrote a shocking book that hit the bookstores before its time, titled The Twisted Badge. Mr. Wright intrigues readers with his wealth of knowledge on crime. He took time out of his busy schedule to speak to the members of Women Fight Back, my organization I founded back in 1989, and who had been litigants and ended up as victims of legal abuse. His book is a shocking look at political corruption and cover-ups stretching from Wyoming to Las Vegas, Los Angeles, and Orange County, the Republican heartland of California. Now, this was written in 2010, so times have changed as far as political agendas go, as we know, as the wind blows. He's a former Treasury agent assigned to the Organized Strike Force. Mr. Wright also served as a Santa Monica police officer and a probation officer in Los Angeles County. He was currently, and I'm not sure if he still is, department chair of the Criminal Justice Department at Rancho Santiago College and adjunct professor in the Criminal Justice Department at Chapman College. He also appeared on my AM/FM radio shows, Issues of the Day in Southern California. And he was a wonderful, wonderful guest. Mr. Wright has lectured throughout Southern California on the subjects of white-collar crime, organized crime, and political corruption, and granted permission to use excerpts from his book to Rose Colombo. People should read informative articles so they are aware of injustices, because injustices can come knocking on your back door at any time, and usually they are unexpected. Mr. Wright states in his book that the sworn testimony of his attorney, Michael Sisarek, stated that there was friction between the former Orange County Sheriff Brad Gates and George Wright. Sworn testimony of a witness stated that he provided political intelligence to Sheriff Gates about his opponents. Wright and other candidates were opponents of the sheriff. Wright alleges that photos were taken of contributors who opposed the sheriff's reelection by the Orange County Sheriff's undercover deputies. The book refers to phones being unlawfully tapped and states that after the sheriff was reelected, one party who opposed Gates' reelection moved out of state, but Mr. Wright continued teaching at Rancho Santiago College in Santa Ana, California. Mr. Wright states in his book that he was in his backyard talking to some friends when all of a sudden a shot rang out and a projectile passed within inches of his face. Furthermore, Mr. Wright states that Sheriff Gates responded to Wright's letter to the editor regarding a police officer that was published in the Orange County Register newspaper. He says that Sheriff Gates stated, "What's appalling to me is the fact that you, Wright, can still look in the mirror each day and equate your feelings and comments about law enforcement professions and remain an instructor in the administration of criminal justice." Afterwards, Mr. Wright stated that he received a phone call in the spring of 1983 from a judge who said that Mr. Wright had been wrongfully investigated by Sheriff Gates' intelligence unit. He says that a judge, a private investigator, and attorney, Michael Sisarek, met and agreed that Sheriff Gates may have violated their constitutional right to privacy, and they filed a federal civil rights action. Wright states that the sheriff declared that neither he nor any of his department conducted any surveillance of or have monitored the activities of either the judge or the other party named, or George Wright. He also states that on March 25, 1986, 3 weeks before the trial was scheduled to begin, Sheriff Gates' personal attorney phoned Wright's attorney and stated that he had something to tell him that would have a tremendous impact on the case. Wright says that the opposing attorney told him that he had 3 tapes to turn over which had not been previously provided, and on March 25, 1987, an attorney representing Sheriff Gates and the county called Mr. Wright's attorney. He asked how much money it'll take to settle the case, and his attorney responded, $375,000, and the offer was immediately accepted by Mr. Wright's attorney. He said on April 1, 1986, a special meeting of the Board of Supervisors convened, and the settlement was ratified, and the payment of $375,000 was authorized. In Psalm 53, the Bible says, "The fool says in his heart, there is no God. They are corrupt, doing abominable iniquity. There is none that does good." I want you to hear a message. This is not just a book. This is a message for humanity and the survival of humanity, written as a political satire in an Orwellian adventure story.
Obamasaurus, the new book by Rose M. Colombo, is an updated version of a political satire that reflects the political roadmap of today's world, written with an Orwellian twist. Will humanity survive or suffer depopulation or extinction? Obamasaurus by Rose M. Colombo, available at Amazon.com.
The Justice Club is back on Colombo Chronicles live podcast. Join Rose Colombo at noon and find out what tips she will provide in a world of little justice.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
That's right. Listen up to Colombo Chronicles Live and be sure to go to Amazon.com and get a copy for yourself and for your friends and your family and wake up America. Because Obamasaurus is a political satire, and critics say it will make readers very concerned about our humanity and our survival at the end. It's also been considered for film. And so if you'd like to say a little prayer for that, I would definitely appreciate it. Also, I wanted to remind you that my book, Is America Under Martial Law? What does yellow fringe really mean on the U.S. flag? Well, most Americans trust their government leaders until about 2010, when they began to wake up. The borders became a serious issue as the Obama-Biden regime continued to fly in millions of illegals and real or fake anti-American Palestinians who are members or links to Hamas, an extremist organization. The illegal foreigners overpopulate for domination, which is part of their written and stated agenda, and to conquer not only America and Israel, but all of Western civilization. So you will not want to miss Is America Under Martial Law? And What Does Yellow Fringe Really Mean on the U.S. Flag by Rose M. Colombo, available at Amazon. Call your bookstore, order it, or go to Barnes & Noble and get a copy of Is America Under Martial Law and Obamasaurus. And on that note, let's continue with Fight Back Legal Abuse, published in 2010, which was my international award-winning book and my first book, and it went viral around the globe in magazines, featured with me and the book, as well as titles such as Brains and Booty Too, which I really enjoyed. So let's continue with A Heavy Badge, Gavel, and Briefcase, which is chapter 3 of the book published in 2010. So watch for Fight Back Legal Abuse 2 coming in 2024. Abuse of power versus protecting their own. Furthermore, Mr. Wright writes in his book about an investigation located in Wyoming that involved high-profile politicians with strong political ties. He said that after 18 months of investigation, that he and his partner were ready to serve a warrant, but that he was advised not to make the arrest. And as a young girl after college, I worked for the sheriff's department. And at that time, you had to get a judge, the sheriff had to get a judge to sign off on a warrant after they explained what the warrant was for, where they were going, who it was about. And they had to get permission from the judge, and it had to be signed. In the 90s, under the Clinton administration, they pushed for, in California, the no-knock warrant, which meant they could just knock down your door and surprise you, guns loaded, pointing at you and your family. And what this has proven to be is terrible, because a little girl on a couch watching TV was shot. A man in his garage was shot. A man was hit multiple times while sleeping in his bed, and on and on and on. So I truly believe we need to get back to taking sheriffs having to go to the court, because judges are on call 24/7, and explaining why and where and what and how, etc., they are about to do, and having the judge sign the warrant. Anyway, this book reads, the investigation was done for all the right reasons, but the system broke down, and deciding that public attention would be the only way which the Wyoming case would be prosecuted, I again contacted the Los Angeles Times, Mr. Wright says. He says, my decision was not an easy one. I violated department regulations and knew the risk involved. Wright says, our public officials and prominent business leaders should be held to the same standards of conduct as everyone else. But we know that isn't happening today, do we not? In fact, I listened to a podcast on X. They were saying that people who were beautiful, super attractive, super wealthy, should not be held to the same standard of law, whether it's murder or manslaughter or whatever the case may be, that they should be above the law. That's very interesting indeed. So I was wondering, well, if someone walked into their business or their home and shot them or someone they cared about or an employee, and they just happened to be beautiful or rich and famous, would they feel the same way? Anyway, Wright goes on to say, I had violated department regulations and knew the risk involved. Our public officials and prominent business leaders should be held to the same standard of conduct as everyone else. Crime is crime. Wright was seeking justice, but instead, he says, on a sweltering Friday, July 1st, 1974, the supervisor of the Los Angeles office of the United States Treasury Department called him into his office. He said, Wright, Washington advises me to have you turn in your badge, gun, credit card, and cash advance. You are relieved of your responsibilities here. Furthermore, Washington is considering prosecuting you on, as of yet, undetermined charges. Now, remember, Wright was just going after corrupt political persons, and this is what happened to him for doing his job. Wright said, "I wanted to remember my badge the way it was, not the distorted image it had become." On July 4th, 1974, while America celebrated its independence, Wright says, "I was being separated forever from government service because I'd done what I thought was right." Wright wrote a resignation letter, but the government wouldn't accept it. And he was told that the wording was not acceptable, and that if it was not changed, he would be prosecuted. Wright asked, "What are the charges?" The man from Washington responded, "We are prepared to arrest you immediately on charges of treason, espionage, giving out confidential income tax information, selling diagrams of government installations to a foreign power." And then almost as if an afterthought, he added, "and the misdemeanor of giving information to the press without going through channels." Mr. George Wright said, "If they arrested me, I'd have a criminal rap sheet and would spend the rest of my life explaining how I came to be arrested for treason and espionage. Not only would my career have been over, but my job prospects would have exceeded folding napkins at a taco stand. I had no choice at all." Wiping away tears of sad frustration, the secretary slowly typed my second letter of resignation. The people with whom I'd spent thousands of hours stood in a small silent group. No one said a word. As I scribbled my signature, it was over. Silent tears. My departure from government service. So fighting back for justice is painful and frustrating and difficult. And many times good people who fight back for justice get gobbled up churning wheels of justice and are ground up, spit out, and never recover. But Mr. Wright turned a terrible injustice into a positive experience. He continues to teach young people and adults about criminal law. He is the perfect example of a man of integrity who became a victim of legal abuse and injustice because he fought back for justice and thereafter became a survivor of legal abuse. Mr. Wright moved on with his life by helping others understanding criminal justice. And my consultations with people around the country who have been scientists, a judge, lawyers, business people, and just average Americans who got caught up in the web of deception of legal injustice, unsuspectingly, and to their surprise, became victims of legal abuse and injustices. And my motto is, I help victims of legal abuse become survivors. And that's what I've been doing for 30 years as an advocate for justice. I have many, many beautiful letters from victims of legal abuse who were even suicidal, who were giving up. They were so depressed after what happened to them in the legal system. And I saved those letters, because those people were so endeared to me and so grateful. And I am just happy I was there to help them. So let's talk about these heavy badges. This is what I wrote. Another story I'd like to share from George Wright's book is about an inmate who wrote a letter in June of 1983 to Judge Youngblood, in which he made several allegations and requested assistance. George Wright states, "At the request of Judge Youngblood, private investigator Pat Bland interviewed inmate Johnson, who was then transported back to the jail. During that interview, which was tape recorded, Johnson provided the following. I was going to court for my trial, and they had 26 people in this little cell, approximately 10 by 10 feet. So use your imagination in a 10 by 10 foot cell or room or 26 people. And that's where you're tossed into. Just think about that for a minute. I was going to court for my trial, and they had these 26 people in this little cell. And you're not supposed to have more than 4 people in the cell. I've read the law. I've tried to show the law to the sergeant, he said. The sergeant got upset and said, well, I don't give a F, and walked away. I've seen him slam inmates into the cell bars. I've seen him beat on them while they're on the ground, twist their arms up, and try to see if they could touch the top of their head behind their back. 26 people in a small area make for a hot, sweaty condition. Nobody could sit down. It smelled like piss, and everybody had to stay away from the wall so they would not smell like piss all day. It smelled like barf in there too. We were in there a couple of hours before we went to court. I said, look at me, I'm sweating. This is a suit. Guys are all wearing suits. And one inmate had been to surgery and he was just getting over it. And he was hurting bad. And I told the deputies about it. They didn't care. They said, well, you guys will be out of here in a half hour anyway. Also, another time, a deputy housed me with a group of blacks. Before he took me into the cell area, he yelled, Nazi on the line. When I noticed there was nothing but blacks in there, I refused to go back in there. I said I wanted to see a sergeant, and he said no. I said, I wanted to see a sergeant because I'm not a Nazi, but if the black prisoners think I'm a Nazi and there isn't nothing but black prisoners down there, get hurt. The deputy said, get back in there. I said, no. He said, I'm warning you, last time, get back in there. Youngblood, let's see, hold on a second. Okay, he said, no. He said, I'm warning you for the last time. Get back in there. Again, he said, no. At that point, another big deputy came in. They dragged me into an alcove and put me on my knees with my hands behind my back. And when I did that, they grabbed my hands and started yanking upwards behind my back. Another deputy shoved my head down, trying to bounce it off the ground. They then picked me up and slammed me against the wall, he said. They then took me into the cell area with the black prisoners, where I got my butt kicked because I was supposed to be a Nazi. He also wrote, I saw them move an inmate by the name of Michael Clemens, charged with child molestation, from protective custody in a tank with violent inmates. They moved him against his will. The deputy moving him said, now we're going to take care of him. Now he's going to get some. Clemens told the deputy, I fear for my life. And those deputies said, shut up. You're going anyways. And when they moved him, I don't know exactly how it happened, but he ended up getting his neck slashed. The deputies gave him a lot of hassle. They let other inmates throw mop water on him. and set his mattress on fire. This is what happened to Clemens, according to this story. The deputy sat and watched and laughed, says, since inmate Johnson provided the names of those involved in the alleged incidents, the information was communicated directly to the sheriff's department. The scope and or extent of their investigation into inmate Johnson's allegations has never been determined. But shortly after Bland's interview, a criminal investigation into Youngblood and Bland's actions was initiated. This investigation, consisting of 250 pages, charged Judge Youngblood and his investigator with removing an inmate from custody because the taped interview of inmate Johnson was allegedly done outside the physical presence of a deputy marshal. When Sheriff Gates personally contacted Orange County Marshal James Byam, he was advised that one deputy marshal was present with Bland and the inmate at all times, precluding a charge of unlawfully removing someone from custody. Remember, injustices don't discriminate against anyone. He says the OCCAS unit conducted criminal investigations into the activities of Judge Youngblood, Pat Bland, and numerous other individuals. Orange County Register investigative reporter Chuck Cook, who wrote Death Behind Bars, a hard-hitting series of articles about jail conditions, was also investigated by OCCAS. Bobby Youngblood was investigated as thoroughly as any other organized crime figure alive, and OCCS spared no expense in gathering detailed evidence of his Texas background and his stormy personal life. Judge Youngblood had made the public aware of problems which would not go away on their own. Also, on March 11, 1986, Cheryl Youngblood testified in a sworn deposition about her contact with Randy Blair and OCCA's supervisor, Tim Simon. Her testimony provides details regarding the methods which, she claims, were utilized by the unit during their investigation of her husband and others, including George Wright, who had the misinformation and disagreeing with the way things were done in Orange County, California. These are just a few examples of people who have experienced injustices from people who work within the system and were confronted by their own and suffered at the hands of injustices for blowing the whistle. Injustices can happen in any county across the nation, not just Orange County. It is extremely important that people understand that if they don't demand justice, that anyone can end up a victim of legal abuse. The taxpayers support and pay the wages and benefits of public servants who are placed in positions of trust, and they swear to uphold the law, violate the law. Therefore, we need ethical attorneys who will fight for us, not run from us when the money runs out. But many do, and few stay to the end. Ironically, the incidents described in George Wright's book and in the book, The Franklin Cover-Up, by attorney, author, and former Nebraska Senator John DeCamp, as well as the book written by Karen Hoffer, MS-MFT, who has passed away, may she rest in peace, and so has Senator John DeCamp, may he rest in peace, and I interviewed both these persons. Overcoming the Devastation of Legal Abuse Syndrome was the name of Karen Hoffer's book. And these books show a pattern of legal abuse and reveal and the need for correction is evident. Many talk radio show hosts touched on some of these issues, but time on the air is brief. in the early 90s, I produced my radio show on KORG, KYMS, KWNK, KGER, Salem, and KIEV, the Talk of the Town, in LA. And at the time was when the politicians were proposing legislation to prevent radio talk show hosts from speaking out on political, speaking about public servants. And I wanted to point that out because we were activists and advocates for justice, and we had people in public office who wanted to criminalize talk show hosts who spoke out about politicians, public servants, and political issues. So this didn't start recently. This has been a slow, progressive, consistent, and persistent agenda by those who seek to destroy U.S. constitutional laws, the supreme laws of the land, that include freedom of speech, freedom of press, freedom to peacefully protest and march and assemble. Very, very serious. Today, some politicians are attacking radio talk show hosts, as well as the Judeo-Christians who speak out on these issues by proposing the implementation of the Fairness Doctrine that would control talk show, radio, and possibly the internet. Third world countries control the media and deny their citizens the right to listen to anything other than their propaganda, and they deny them to exercise the freedom of speech or assembly or protest against their politicians and political leaders. After 1989, Women Fight Back for Legal Justice, my organization, exposed many injustices, which led to a national outcry of litigants from around the nation. They were legally abused by the system or suffered injustices, and victims of legal abuse had their property and assets diminished or wiped out, and even non-offending parents lost custody of their children after filing for divorce. Some alleged that they walked into court with property and walked out of court bankrupted. Some claimed they walked into court with the home and walked out of the court homeless. Some people claim they walked into court with financial security and walked out of court with no financial security. Some people claim they walked into the court with custody of their children. Some allege that they walked into court with property, businesses, and walked out of court bankrupted. Some innocent victims ended up in jail and lost their freedom because they didn't want to sign a corrupted settlement offer by the opposing attorney, believe it or not. The system was broken. The system is broken. And were and are unsuspecting recipients of unjust decisions many times, with nowhere at that time to go for help until myself founded Women Fight Back for Legal Justice and gave them a voice by holding meetings. And also it ended up not just for women and children, but many men of good character who joined and supported our organization. The general public at that time didn't want to believe that this could happen in America, and I don't blame them. Who does? State bars at that time denied most of the complaints against unethical attorneys filed by thousands of clients. The last I heard, there was like 800,000 complaints, which was quite a while back, each year. And it was so overwhelming that they no longer even encourage complaints. The Office of Family Support didn't do much to help parents obtain their child support arrearages, nor did the District of Attorneys at that time. And I led evening vigils and marches and protests against the district attorneys in Southern California who were not doing their job and collecting child support and spousal support arrearages, which hit national news as well. So, the newspapers reported on the failure of the district attorneys to collect child support arrearages and featured myself and my group and quoted me. In the 1990s, the American people were happy because the economy was growing and people were working and they didn't care about corruption or injustices or immorality or that the President of the United States was outsourcing our jobs, manufacturing companies, and our intellectual property, and trying to give away our Long Beach naval base and port to communist China. But I was paying attention, and I'm still paying attention. Are you? In fact, most people didn't want to hear about these issues, and they'd say, oh, so what? Everyone has a job. Who cares? Well, it's affecting them now, and not everyone does have a job. And people are losing their homes again, like they did in 2008. And when the government, Congress, voted to give fraudulent loans to people who can afford to buy a home or pay the mortgage on a home and lost their homes, millions of Americans lost their homes due to foreclosures. And today, millions of Americans are worried about housing because of the cost of living for necessities of life, the cost of rent, mortgage, electricity, gasoline, and so forth, right after the lockdowns and where people lost their jobs and their businesses. So Americans need to think about what has actually occurred since the 90s or even the 70s that has been taking over the constitutional freedom, liberty, rights, and sovereignty of this great republic. And allowed, since 2009, presidents to ignore Congress, who are the only body to make laws and approve laws and write laws by executive order, which is unconstitutional and is not part of their job duties. So are there executive orders that create laws legal, lawful, and constitutional? You need to ask yourself these questions. Well, God bless you. God bless America. Hope I enlightened you a little bit today about what I wrote in Fight Back Legal Abuse number 1 and watch for in 2010 and watch for Fight Back Legal Abuse 2. And don't forget to get your copy of Obamasaurus.
Obamasaurus, the new book by Rose M. Colombo, is an updated version of a political satire that reflects the political roadmap of today's world. Written with an Orwellian twist, will humanity survive or suffer depopulation or extinction? Obamasaurus by Rose M. Colombo, available at Amazon.com.
Well, my friends, time flies, and now is the time to say goodbye. Thanks so much for being part of the Colombo Chronicles family. You are appreciated. Please do it now. Bookmark push that like, share, and follow button. Oh, and don't forget to comment below and stay in touch. Make your family part of the Colombo family. Until next Wednesday at noon, remember, God loves you, and so does the Rose.